Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Do you like what you're hearing right now? Then be sure to check out VOC Nation. Whether it's on VOCNation.com or your favorite podcast provider, VOC Nation offers the greatest in live and on-demand content, great interviews, and incredible insight from those who have lived the business. 7 days a week, VOCNation.com. And don't forget to check us out on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Welcome to another edition of Bumps and Thumps, the talk of wrestling. I'm Brian Ferguson. First of all, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. I hope you had a great holiday season. As most of you know that are subscribers, we haven't been on for a few weeks, and that was because of the holidays. And I decided that I wanted to spend a little more time with my family, so that's what I did. So we're back today, though, and we've got our good friend, the man, the myth, the legend, the historian, the greatest, my friend, George Shire. Thanks for coming back on, George.
Hey, man. Wow. I was wondering, I had to look over my shoulder, who you snuck in. Superstar, man of the hour.
There you go.
Hey, good. I'm glad to hear that you had a good holiday, and you mentioned something after my heart. You spent time with your family, and man, I tell you what, that is what the holidays are all about. They're so busy and hectic and hustle and bustle, and you got to slow down and give a hug to the family and be appreciative for what we are blessed with.
You bet. Yeah, no. During that time, and what we're going to discuss today is my wife and I went and saw that movie, The Iron Claw, the Von Erich story.
Yep.
And I know you went and saw it as well.
And, I did.
And what we're going to talk about is, if it's good with you, we're going to talk about the good and the not so good. You know, I mean, overall, you know, we both saw it. We're going to have our opinions and, you know, do with you will what you will with it. And George, I want to talk to you about it. Tell us a little bit about what you thought about the movie. Like, you know, what I guess what you thought was good, and if you thought anything was not so good or not accurate. I will say this: I saw my friend and your friend, James Beard. He was in it.
Yes,
he was very good, and a shout out to him. I know he was a big part of the movie as far as being a consultant and that kind of thing. So let's talk about it.
I had, when you mentioned James Beard, let's just touch on that up front. I had a chance last July when I made a brief stop down at the George Tragos Luthez Wrestling Hall of Fame in Iowa. And of course, James was there. And he and I had a chance to talk a little bit. He is one of the greatest guys, you know, a former referee in the business. And he was, you know, he had his foot in the door, saw a lot of things, worked around a lot of the wrestlers. And of course, Dallas-Fort Worth, that was one of his territories. And I got to know James really well when he and I worked at the now ill-fated Hall of Fame in Wichita Falls when he and I were on the nominating committee together. And so we know each other well. He's a straight guy. He's straight laced. He's just, I was glad to see that he had a part. And he had told me he was going to have some parts in it when back then, you know, that Iron Claw was still on the production table. So that was good. Yes. I enjoyed seeing him. You know, Brian, I want to share this before we do anything about the Iron Claw movie. I had two people in the past 2 weeks that said to me that they were surprised that I didn't weigh in more on the movie as to the accuracy of it, or and they said this to me because they know that, you know, number one, I want facts. I want things right. I want chronological history. And yes, yeah. I do. And you know this. I'm a stickler on that. So, but, you know, I went to the movie, and anything that I say here, folks, throughout the podcast, some of it's my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. Here's the bottom line. First of all, I got a call from my neighbor. He said, you want to go see the Iron Claw? We went together. I didn't know what to expect. I knew it was a movie about the Von Erichs, kind of highlighting the anguish and hardship that Kevin endured being the oldest. And so I understood that going in. The thing that I did, though, is I went in with an open mind, knowing that there were a lot of non-wrestling people that were involved in the making and producing of the movie. And I also realized going in, if I was going to be fair to myself, that I had to accept the fact that sometimes they're not going to be accurate. So doing that, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
The one thing that I thought was interesting is I liked the opening scene. And for those of you that have seen it, it's kind of highlighting in black and white, which was so period perfect, of Fritz kicking the crap out of an opponent. And mind you, these are actors. All the wrestlers in here are portrayed, that are portrayed are actors playing the part. So immediately when I saw the Fritz opening scene, I was kind of impressed. I thought they nailed Fritz pretty good, because you have to remember, well, those that don't, I saw Fritz back in the 60s when he was still in his heyday. I actually saw him as a younger kid when he was in the AWA for a coffee break, but he was a hated German, you know, with the Iron Claw.
Yeah.
Baron von Raschke fans, I'm sorry to inform you, it was Fritz that came up with it first. So that's all the people need to know on that one. But the portrayal of Fritz, I immediately was kind of relieved, because I thought the guy playing him in the ring looked like Fritz.
Yes. I agree. Yeah.
And I was thinking back to photos that I have of him, and I said, I'm thinking, wow, you know, this guy, they got the character right. Well, the only dismay I had was that they didn't give a little bit more of the background of Fritz in the early years as to how really the dynasty that was going to happen was being built. But then I realized in a 2-hour film, you know, how much can you do? So again, I had to be open-minded about that. Yeah. Sometimes the best stuff is on the cutting room floor. You know, he talked in the very beginning about what he had to do to be successful. Yeah. And then we kind of jumped ahead, you know, right away to the kids, you know, the business. And for those that were non-wrestling fans that may have seen it, which I'm going to guess there are some that never watched wrestling at all, will go see this movie.
Yeah.
And then for those that were wrestling fans or are still today, following today's product, they weren't around during that era, so they won't pick up on anything that's inaccurate or out of sequence. That was the key thing. There were a lot of things that were out of sequence. Something happened before or after it should have, and they don't explain it. But the average person isn't going to pick up on that. So it isn't even worth, I've seen people on Facebook going, well, you know, they did this and they should have done that. And, you know, I don't understand what they did this for. I think you're wasting your time. You know, it's, my take is that anytime that pro wrestling can get national attention, and be something that's more nostalgic than what we are offered today, because I'm not a fan, as you know. So anything that can shed some light. Did you know that, Brian? Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah. You don't watch today's product.
I turned on NXT last night by accident.
Wow.
And totally by accident. And I swear to you, I think it couldn't have been more than 6 or 7 minutes. And I went, okay, I'm done. But anyway, we digress. I don't know. They were having some sort of a battle royal with everybody killing everybody. I don't know who follows that. But anyway, the movie, if you know the Von Erich story, it really is fairly accurate. Though they left out things like in the territory down there. This just in, folks, it was a drug haven. There was no doubt in the 80s that wrestlers and wrestling fans knew that WCCW, as it became, if you wanted drugs, you went down there, whether it be the Von Erichs, the Freebirds, whoever else was on in their circuit, Gino Hernandez, oh my gosh, Chris Adams, all these guys. Drugs were very much in the forefront. And it could be debated many times as to how undrugged any of them were when they were working in the ring. We'll just say that. Yeah. So they didn't touch on that, and that's good. I mean, the legitimacy of it is that it was a family that had some serious problems. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, they had a young boy, a young son, Jack. Fritz's real name, Jack Adkisson, and the young Jack Jr., and he was electrocuted and drowned. I don't remember how old he was, but he was pretty little.
I think he was like 5 or 6.
5 or 6, yeah.
And he got electrocuted, and he fell in a snowbank.
Yes.
And drowned.
Right.
And nobody, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tragic, but you know, this goes back, of course, you got to remember, this goes back to sometime in the 50s, very early 60s, whatever it was. Yeah. And, you know, and that had to be very hard for the family to endure, mm-hmm. for Fritz, Jack, and Doris, his wife. And mm-hmm. Anytime you lose a child, that pulls your heart out.
Yeah.
So that had to be tough. But then we had Kevin, who, you know, was the oldest after that. And I think the thing that comes through in the movie, if anything, is that if it is portrayed this way, and I think it's factual, Kevin was the one with the most sense. I think he was the oldest, and somehow mm-hmm. he got the gene that, you know, made him a little bit more on the right track all the time.
Mature. I'd say mature.
Yeah, mature. And as things unfolded, he started having the weight of the world on him, because the movie is good in the sense that it talks about Fritz taking over the territory, building the territory around his boys. One of the things that I thought was interesting in it was, you know, I hear here in the AWA all the time about how Greg Gagne, you know, the only reason he had a job was because his daddy was the promoter, and the only push he got was because his daddy was the champ, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, Brian, you and I have talked that, and we know from Greg, too, that he had to work his butt off to earn his spot. And yes, his dad owned the promotion. But, you know, this was like any other business in the world. I mean, if you have a jewelry business and you have a son that works for you and takes over the business, or a daughter that takes over the business, that's kind of a natural progression in life. You could have a grocery store chain or whatever it is, whatever the business. The kids taking over the business, they still have to work. Come on. They still have to do things right to make the business right. So I always felt that was unfair. In the case of Fritz, by the time he got to the 80s, you know, during the 70s, Fritz Von Erich was God in the Dallas-Fort Worth and surrounding area. When he had bought the territory in the mid-60s, and taken it over when he moved back home. He was from Texas. He was a graduate of, I think, South Methodist College.
I'm not sure
if I'm getting that right, but I think that's what it was. He was a local guy, Jack Adkison, good athlete, football player. You know, so he was well known, well respected in Dallas, Fort Worth, and the territory surrounding that. And he would have been like the Vern Gagne of that territory, you know, like Vern was here, or like Vince McMahon was out east, or, you know, Eddie Graham was in Florida. So, he definitely, when he came back home, because a lot of people don't know, he worked in the early 50s. He was a huge heel in the Buffalo territory up in New York. And again, as the German heel, the hated German after World War II, up in Toronto, Canada, always over as a blitzkrieg or whatever the word is. He was evil, you know. And then here in Minneapolis, he in the Minneapolis territory in the 50s, he was way over with other German wrestlers.
Omaha.
And then Omaha. And a little side note there, for a coffee break, he was AWA champion in Omaha, winning it from Vern Gagne in July 7th of 1963 in Omaha. And then there was a return match, and Vern had put it on him in Omaha. They went down to Amarillo. And that's where Fritz was kind of working and headquartering at the time. And Fritz got to defend the title to Vern August 8th of 63.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So it would have only been about a week and about a week period there, July 27 to, I don't know how.
Sip of coffee. Coffee. And
so, but definitely it was one that they acknowledged.
Yeah, it was a world champion. Can't say
the AWA did acknowledge the change. Vern won it back. So it was done as a favor. But, yeah, he had that small tenor here. The other thing that was in the movie, I thought it interesting. And this is flash-forwarding a little bit, but I thought of it. There's one scene where they have Kevin on the ropes in a tag match, and they have a wrestler that's his partner kind of not tagging off to him, kind of in the show. Well, that was supposed to have been Lance Von Erich.
Okay.
And Lance was the fictional cousin that they had brought in. Ricky Vaughn, I think he wrestled as, or Ricky, I don't remember what other name he used. He was in the Pacific Northwest territory. Nicely built guy along the lines of what Kerry Von Erich looked like. And they brought him in briefly as a cousin because after the tragedy started happening, and they felt they needed another Von Erich. I thought that was kind of a goofy thing to do at the time. And then when I saw it, they never even acknowledged it. But that's who that was supposed to have been in the ring, Lance.
Yeah.
So anyway, up to that point, that was my thought.
Yeah.
My biggest problem was I was looking at the way they portrayed the wrestlers, the characters, the actors. I know that the Zac Efron, I think that's how he pronounces his name. He was the one that played Kevin.
Yeah.
And I actually saw an interview segment. Who was he on with? Kelly Clarkson? Does that sound right? Does she have a...
That's probably right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was her. I saw a segment where... It was short. I just saw the segment where she had Zach and then the other three guys that played Kerry, David, and Chris. They were on her show.
Mike.
Mike. I'm sorry, yeah, not Chris. Yeah. Chris was left out completely.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah,
yeah, he was completely left out. But yeah, the Zac Efron, he was the only one sitting with the group on this Clarkson interview that I would have never recognized him as, because he wore a hairpiece and stuff in the movie.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, he had a wig on.
And a lot bigger too.
Yes, and see, that was the first thing that struck me. I looked at the characters and I said, you know, Kevin is bigger than the Kevin Von Erich was in the ring. Kevin was taller, wasn't as built like Kerry. And of course, we know Kevin was the barefoot one all the time.
Right.
But I thought that the Kevin character would have been better for the Kerry character in look wise.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
I thought they did pretty good. Well, they did pretty good with David. I thought the David character, David was the tallest of the brood.
He was.
And of course, they say again that David was the most talented or the most agile or the most adaptable to wrestling. Right. I only saw David. I saw him twice, and they were brief. Mm-hmm. Once I saw him in St. Louis,
yeah,
and once I saw him in Dallas, and okay. I couldn't say whether I thought he was superstar material or not. He was just a young kid at the time.
Yeah.
He was the one they were pushing to get to the AWA title. They did squelch the rumor that, or tried to squelch the rumor that David had a drug situation in Japan.
Right.
That it was ruptured
intestines
or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, again, he met a sad ending, and that's too bad. So, So yeah, the character wise, I didn't think they did as good a job, but it worked. The one that offended me the most, actually two of them, but one of them that offended me the most that I thought, I don't know how they scripted this. And I'm going to bring this up because I had another person on Facebook say, oh, I thought this guy was the greatest at portrayal. And that's Harley Race.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Harley
Race.
I thought the Harley Race character, the guy they had playing him, he was awful. He was awful. I sat through it and I went, I'm sitting in my chair at the theater and I'm going, really?
Yeah.
Just thinking to myself, oh my God, really?
Yeah.
He tried to capture Harley in his interview, but he didn't from the Harley Race I watched for 30 years.
Right. Yeah.
And when they got him in the ring, I mean, I know at different times Harley kind of had, sometimes he'd have a little gut on him. Harley, for the most part, never looked like this buffoon. Mm. And that bothered me. And, and then the guy that did Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He couldn't have been more awful. He couldn't have been more awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to me, that was so glaring.
Yeah.
The
Race thing, I will say too, like, even, you know, Harley had tattoos on his forearms and, you know, nothing.
Nothing.
He didn't have any.
No.
Not even, you know, and I don't know if that was purpose. I'm sure it was, but I mean, maybe my opinion.
I would say they
that,
didn't look at Harley Race close enough to know that he had tattoos.
I'm going to give the benefit of doubt that James Beard probably told him something like, hey, you probably need to have this on there. People are going to notice. And they probably, the production crew are probably like, you know what? The guy, you know, he's been gone and he has been out of wrestling so long, probably people won't even notice it, which is a big mistake because especially nowadays, people are going to go back and look at pictures on the internet and say, wait a minute. I mean, I saw it, right? I even leaned over to my wife and said, hey, that's not how Harley Race looks at all. He doesn't have a gut like that. He doesn't have it, and the guy don't have any tattoos. Ric Flair, I mean, even my wife, who's not a fan, knows who Ric Flair is, and said no. And there's other things too, but I'll let you get back to what you were talking about. It just kind of that kind of bothered me, and I'm going to bet James Beard probably said something, and on that one, on those two especially, they probably waved it off. That's my guess, because I know James, he's pretty accurate on stuff, especially with Harley and those guys. Yeah.
Yep. Well, here's the thing. You just brought up a point that sometimes they figured maybe no one would notice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an old school wrestling promoter's mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, they only wanted fans to remember what they wanted them to remember. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were so good at forgetting things or eliminating things or. So
true.
I guess in that sense, that didn't. The thing with James Beard, I watched the credits at the end of the movie. I purposely sat through them.
Yeah.
And the only names that I recognized as far as being anywhere near around wrestling was James Beard and Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Okay.
He was listed in there. I don't recall any other person that I could pull out and say, well, that was a person that was involved at the time or around the business. So I don't know who was consulted on it. I've got to believe that here's where I say makes the movie okay. At the beginning, the very first thing they put across the screen is based on a true story. And I've told folks, I said, the key word in that sentence is based. Because once they do that, then there's creative license. They can base it on the story, but they can change the events, whatever the case may be, you know.
Yeah.
The thing about the two characters that we're talking about, though, Race and Flair, I think that was the most glaring and disappointing to me, that they had to have somebody that could have done Flair better. He was awful. He was awful.
I will say one more character they could have probably done better was Carrie. Carrie was much more built.
Yep, absolutely.
Much better looking than the guy that was portraying. And I know there's people out there that look like Carrie Von Erich. Maybe they couldn't find one that had the same type or that could act like Carrie as far as his demeanor and his personality. I don't know. But and no disrespect to the guys that played the characters. I mean, they did the best they could.
I applaud them.
Yeah, they did the best they could. I mean, those guys, you know, I watched a little of that Kelly Clarkson thing, talking about what they had to do to get ready for the movie and all that. And that's a lot of work. And even if you're selected for it, that's quite an honor. So no discredit to the actors that portrayed their parts. It's just that I think the casting crew, or however you want to call them, could have done a more thorough. And I think, like you said, people forget. I mean, Carrie's been gone for 30 years, you know. Mike has been gone for 35, 36 years. Dave has been gone for almost 40 years. So I think you hit it on the head where people aren't going to remember really what they look like.
And that's the key thing. Like I say, some wrestling fan, like you mentioned, your wife went, she's not a wrestling fan. However, she has a little bit of osmosis coming through with you in the house.
Right.
Okay. So she may not qualify as a non-wrestling fan. She just would have not be a fan, but she knows stuff because she's around.
Of me. Yeah. That's the same
for Lorraine, you know. Yeah. She may not pick up on this, but she picks up on some things because God knows that I live and breathe this stuff. So
yeah.
The thing that bothers me when they do a movie that is based on a true story or they're portraying a family or a situation, and I know this is a little off topic, I've never done that before. but back in 2005, the Johnny Cash movie Walk the Line came out with Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know if you ever saw the movie.
I have seen it, yeah.
Okay, Walk the Line. Well, Johnny Cash, of course, passed away in 2003. Okay. And his son, John Carter Cash, and others worked on putting this movie together in 2005. Overall, you know, me being a lifelong Johnny Cash fan, I had to see this movie. And I did see it. I think I saw it 13 times in the theater. Wow. So I guess I was addicted to it.
I guess but, so.
Here was the thing that bothered me when I saw it, the movie. Mm-hmm. The movie, right on the screen, they put Memphis, 1955. Okay, so you know immediately that that's where you're at. Memphis, 1955, in the movie. Well, then they show the street scene. This was right at the beginning of the movie. It drove me nuts. On the street scene, which I'm thinking would have been in front of the Sun Records studio, they have a 1954 Oldsmobile parked on the street. Well, that's cool. It's a 55, the 54 Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
But, and you, if you look at the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I'm probably the only one on the planet Earth that ever noticed this. They're going to say, Shire, you need to get a light. But the 54 Oldsmobile has thin white walls on the tires. Thin.
Thin.
I don't know if you know the difference, but back in the 50s, the
white walls. Yeah, I know they had the big
They had the big old whites around all the Well, the problem with the thin white walls is thin white walls did not come out. They weren't even invented. They weren't even used on cars until 1962. True story.
I wouldn't have noticed that myself.
And I'm see, not the average person is never going to notice it. But to me, when I saw that, it was like, you got to be kidding me. Whoever did the back in 55 sequence, they had 50s cars in it from 55 and back. But that one glaring error, the reason it's glaring to me is because it couldn't have been that way. They weren't invented. And people say, well, that's so trivial. You know what? But the bottom line was, you knew that the actors in the show had to do a lot. Joaquin Phoenix, Reese Witherspoon, they had to learn to sing. They had to learn to do the songs. Whether or not they did them as perfectly as Johnny and June did, you know, that's debatable. But doing a movie like that, it is to me the little things that make it the reality. So in the Fritz or the Iron Claw movie, it bothered me when they had scenes in the Iron Claw that weren't exactly right. And in the beginning, when Jack comes out of the arena and they go to the little motorhome that he's got hooked on to the Cadillac, out of sequence because that couldn't have happened with the car that they had there. They had a Cadillac, but it couldn't have happened in the time. Nobody else is going to pick up on it.
That's why you're the historian.
Has anyone seen, I'm going to ask the fans listening when they hear this, and I'll even ask you this. Have you seen the... It was the Dark Side of the Ring episode, Vice, that produced the Dark
Side. With Von Erichs.
And Kevin is prominent in their talking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've saw
it. I watched that. And I'm telling you, I really thought that was a far better and more honest portrayal of the Von Erich legacy than the movie was. If you watch them back to back, you've got two entirely different stories.
Yeah. The one thing that really kind of disappointed me too is they cut out the youngest kid, Chris. You know, I know he really never got in the ring or anything, but They could have at least mentioned the guy.
He did do a couple little runs.
Okay, he did a couple matches, but I mean, I just feel like he got, you know, the shaft, and maybe that's what Kevin wanted. I don't know. I just kind of felt like,
I don't know
they had another.
I don't know if it was on the Clarkson thing or some other place I heard, but someone said that Chris, yes, was left out, but they felt that it was one too many tragedies because he also.
And that could be it too. Yeah. I mean, they all committed suicide except for Jack and David. And David, I apologize. David died.
Well, David's the mystery in this, Brian, because we don't. I still don't know to this day whether he really did have this, you know, they showed him in the movie where he's sicker than a dog puking.
Yeah.
And whether or not this intestinal thing, I mean, I'm not, it's a horrible
way. I remember it was called toxic shock syndrome in his intestines. That was in the '80s when he passed away, and it was in the wrestling magazines and some articles in the paper, they said he died of toxic shock syndrome in his intestines.
Which is weird because that's what Mike had later on.
Right, when he had the shoulder surgery and then he got an infection. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we'll never probably know what happened with David, actually. I'm sure that's all buried somewhere and we might not ever find out, but I just kind of wish that they would have at least, I know it was another tragedy, but the Iron Claw, I mean, it was based on tragedies, really, if you think about it. I mean, overall, I mean, it was Kevin. And I wish one more thing they would have did, George, is stated, you know, why Kevin, you know, didn't wear boots in the ring.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. He forgot his boots the first time he went to a match.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you ain't got time. Get out there in there and do it. And that's, you know, a key part because I'm sure people are asking, why do you wrestle in bare feet? I mean, I would have if I didn't know. Why is he wrestling in bare feet?
Well, and it was interesting, too, because they had I wish that they would have talked. It's like they left little pieces out. When they had Kerry getting on the motorcycle and taking off down the highway, and he was speeding. And of course, we know he was a little high.
Mm-hmm.
And they show you going, he's coming. You can see the headlights in front of him. And then all of a sudden, there's no crash. We don't see any accident.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him getting out of bed on his crutches. And then when he gets to that kitchen scene where they show his foot missing,
right?
You know, good camera graphics there, but they don't tell you, and unless you were a fan and knew that he crashed, to me that was left out. They should have showed the crash, or they should have had some sort
at least made the noise.
Yes
And then he gets out of bed and he's on crutches.
If you notice, the screen actually several times we'll just go black for a second and then go to the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that. And that was what they did there.
Yeah.
But to explain, and then, you know, they tried to emphasize that, you know, Kerry had to work hard to try to walk and put that boot on and be able to maneuver and stuff. And we know that that's probably where the drug addiction really hit. Probably truly from pain, et cetera, whatever. Yeah. And the pressure that he had.
From his dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, they painted. I'm not sure that. And maybe I'm naive. I'm not sure that Fritz was the tyrant that they painted him out to be.
Yeah.
I think they made it sound like. And again, maybe he was, you know, Kevin. Yeah. You know, Kevin, you're the guy, you're going to be the one to do it. But when Kevin didn't get the job done, okay, Kerry, you're my favorite. And they actually said that. You're my favorite.
Yeah, you're my favorite.
David,
you're
my favorite. You're going to do this. They built up a rivalry between the brothers. You saw that in there. Technically, they were a little bit ticked because the other one was getting the chance.
Right.
The other thing that I thought was interesting was they had Kerry win the title from Flair, which he did. And that was the David. That was the David Von Erich Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
But they show him winning it, and then all of a sudden they've got Harley Race on, and they're trying to go get the title again. They didn't tell. You know, I'm sitting there at first. I thought, well, we didn't. They never told us Kerry lost it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
those are little things, but I really do. I think if you watch The Vice. And it's on YouTube, Dark Side of the Ring, Von Erich's on the, is it Vice TV? Is that what it is?
Vice TV, Vice, yeah, it's on your, but yeah, it's on YouTube too. I just watched it the other day again. It's on YouTube
I watched now. That and I was very impressed with it. I legitimately felt the sorrow that Kevin had to deal with. And that's funny because I remember when Kerry had died. Way back then, I made the comment, I mean, kind of to myself, but man, what is Kevin thinking? You know, he's the last one here. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you live with that? The other thing that I thought was interesting is there was no, whether or not this is true or not, because we were never in the private lives of Fritz and Doris,
mm-hmm.
you know, as husband and wife.
Right.
But they made it seem in the movie that she literally had no voice, no say, nothing to do with anything that was going on with Fritz and the boys. That Fritz ruled with an iron claw.
Yeah.
Whether or not that was true, we don't really know. Because even she would say to the boys, well, your dad, you have to deal with that yourself. She didn't have anything to do with it. And you felt bad for her because... Mm-hmm. We do know in real life that after the final death, that Doris and Fritz split up and she left him. So there had to be some, maybe it was just too much for her to deal with the tragedies, but they don't say that in the movie, but at the very end, you'll see that Fritz comes into the, I think it's like the dining room area and he asks where supper is. And Doris said she's not making it and she's painting.
Well,
you can see that was the split.
Yeah.
And But Fritz, as a promoter, they don't expel on this. But he was really one of the more respected promoters in that era with, you know, you had Gagne, you had Watts, you had Roy Scheider, you had Don Owen, Muchnick and Eddie Graham. And then lo and behold, you throw McMahon in there too, Daddy McMahon.
Era,
Fritz was in that group that, you know, these were territories that were good. They paid well. The other thing I thought was interesting, and this is a noted error, but I think only I would pick up on it. They say that the Von Erichs are going to go against Bruiser Brody and Gino Hernandez.
Yeah, in the beginning. Yeah, that's right.
In the beginning. And I thought that was interesting because Brody was never an adversary to the Von Erichs. He was on their side. It was one of the few territories that he was a baby face.
Okay.
I better say face in case some people think I'm... But yeah. And then what about the Brody character in the movie? The guy was a midget compared to Frank Brody. Frank Gooch. Yeah, I don't think he looked like Brody at all.
All those guys. The only one and Zac Efron playing Kevin, he was way too big for playing
way
Kevin.
Way too big. Yeah.
And I thought Kerry Von Erich should have been taller than Kevin, at least a little bit, and more built.
Well, but Kevin was the best built of the whole group.
Kevin was, but I mean, Kerry had a more, how do you want to say, I don't want to say bodybuilder, but I mean, he was, I can't explain it, but Kevin, overall athlete, physique wise, yes, because he had the ripped abs, very lean. Kerry was he was bigger, but bulkier, what I'm trying to say, I guess, in his arms and his chest.
Yeah.
David, I think the guy that played David did a good job because David was pretty normal looking.
Yeah.
Athlete, as far as he played, he was tall, but he didn't have all the ripped abs and the big muscles. He was just a very strong guy and tall. And Mike, the guy that played Mike, yes, Mike was lanky. He was, I mean, bigger guy, but I mean, I thought that guy did okay playing Mike too. I mean, you know, like you said, overall, it was a good movie.
I think it was.
I mean, really, if you're not a wrestling person like you and I, you're more of it than I am, obviously, but I think you would enjoy the movie. There's a few things missing, but I mean, I thought they did overall a pretty good job other than, yeah, the few things.
Overall, and I actually, then I went back, I told you I saw it with my neighbor.
Yeah.
And then a week ago or so, it was last Wednesday. We're taping this on a Wednesday. Wednesday, I went with Lorraine. I said, you know, do you want to go over? And we went over. And I wanted to see it again because, you know, with any movie or any show, you watch it the second time, you pick out a couple different things that you didn't notice the first time. So yeah. I enjoyed doing that. And that was when I picked out the little things like the Lance Von Erich thing.
Yeah.
I didn't catch those. Overall, I tell folks, support the movie.
Yeah.
Anything that we can do to keep old school wrestling alive, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Whether or not history is portrayed exact in it, you know, again, based.
Yeah.
Get that key word in there.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm, honestly, George, I think part of it might have been, okay, there's so much history with the Von Erichs, too. You know, it was a two-hour-plus movie. Mm-hmm. They probably had to condense it down. And they might have filmed all that stuff and, like, had to make cuts because, okay, this is – it probably was a four-hour film originally, and people aren't going to stay for 4 hours.
It's that way with movies and books all the time.
Stuff right, so you're gonna you got to condense it down to 2 hours, and so some of those cuts, you know, I mean, but like you said, overall, I thought it was a good movie. You know, James Beard, a good friend of ours, you know, I thought he did great in it, and as consulting as a referee, I mean, I was watching for him because I knew he was in it. I'd be watching for him, and I'd see him a few times. Like, oh, there's, and I'd lean over to my wife, hey, that's James Beard right there. Honey, you remember him?
Yeah.
Because she met him in Las Vegas.
I did that with my neighbor.
I was like, there is James Beard. There he is. No. Yeah. So,
you know, opinion,
overall, great movie.
One of the things that, from a nostalgic standpoint, that I actually went, wow, because I had one of those flashback moments when they showed the scene of the Sportatorium. And they're going for the night's matches. You know, the Sportatorium, Brian. One of the things that I loved about old school wrestling is the smaller arenas that we had. Mm. You know, we didn't have these 30,000 seat arenas like we have today.
Right.
We had a 10,000 seat, maybe max auditorium in most cities. And if you had a 10,000 crowd for wrestling, it was a sellout, baby.
Yeah.
But normally, they were smaller venues. And what a lot of people don't realize, excuse me, is the Sportatorium in Dallas is legendary. Mm-hmm. You know, when I can hear Bill Mercer talking about the world-famous Sportatorium, I can hear my buddy Boyd Pierce, who used to be their TV guy back in the 60s and into the very early, the 70s. And Boyd, you know, talking about the Sportatorium. And then I had the opportunity to actually be in the Sportatorium for wrestling.
Oh, wow.
And it was a wrestling venue that was like few others. It just had wrestling written on it.
Yeah.
So it pretty much was exclusive for Tuesday Night Wrestling. It was owned by the promoter, Ed McElmore or McLemore, however pronounced his name. He actually owned the building. Okay. And then they had some other things. Yeah. There's actually a sign. If you look at the movie real close up in the corner, it's got the Dallas wrestling and everything advertised, but then they got, I can't remember what it is. It was the other thing that they have there, like dancing or something.
Okay. But
what a unique place for wrestling. And it was, it was like a pit. The ring was down in the center and you walked in.
Yeah.
It was an old tin building.
Yeah.
You know, in the summertime, it had to be 150 degrees in there because they didn't have air conditioning. Air conditioning,
yeah, yeah.
So I had a moment, and that was a real picture of the sportatorium. That looked cool.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know, like I said, I'm glad we did this today. I enjoyed the movie overall. I mean, I don't mean to be nitpicky about it, and don't take it the wrong way, fans. Overall, great movie. If you're a fan, go out and see it. It's worth it. It really is. It's a great story. And I want to thank you, George, my friend, for coming on today and doing this with me. Always a pleasure. Always.
It is. It is. Yeah. Always fun.
All right. So on that note, folks, if you're watching, thank you. If you're listening, thank you. And if you haven't subscribed, please do so. One more time, Mr. George Shire, thank you, my friend. And Happy New Year to everyone. And we will talk to you soon.
Hey, this is Total Package, Lex Luger. You're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
VOC Nation's own Stroh Maestro suffered a major medical and financial catastrophe this year. From the VOC Nation family, to all of you, please continue to pray for Stroh Maestro for his continued recovery. You can also donate to his cause, paypal.me/PapaStroh.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Check out In the Room every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in. Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stroh Maestro, Kazzy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into like snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Steins of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You getting ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby.
VOC Nation is one of the longest running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Works. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Phil Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, Tony here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think, I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion.
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a loss.
Did women have anything to do?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation radio network.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.